Joining us on today's Innovative Ideas podcast is Dr. Scott Gottlieb, a practicing physician who has served in various capacities at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, including Senior Advisor for Medical Technology, Director of Medical Policy Development, and most recently, Deputy Commissioner for Medical and Scientific Affairs. Dr. Gottlieb has also served as a Senior Policy Advisor at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and is currently a Resident Fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Scott, just a few days after healthcare reform passed in late March, a number of companies, Deere, Verizon, and AT&T, immediately took charges to earnings as a result of a provision in the law that removed the tax deductibility for a subsidy the companies were receiving for paying drug benefits for their retirees. The subsidy was to encourage the companies to keep covering their retirees' drug benefits rather than dropping them into Medicare Part D. Democrats on the Energy and Commerce Committee took offense at this and demanded that the companies release a bunch of documents, all of which proved that the companies were in fact right, as the committee later conceded. So already we're starting to see some unanticipated, at least by the authors of the law, problems, costs cropping up within just the first couple of months. Your recent article, The Drug Stock Sell-Off, points out that there's a new round of unanticipated fall-off for another industry, this time the pharmaceutical industry, which, unlike some of the companies I just named before, actually worked pretty closely with the administration to get healthcare reform passed. Could you talk about some of the provisions in the law that are affecting the industry right now?
Well, that's right. I think the companies, the pharmaceutical companies and the analysts that follow them on Wall Street didn't fully anticipate some of the impact of provisions in the law that was designed to take some money away from the drug companies to help pay for the expansion in coverage. And those provisions ended up hitting earnings to the drug companies more than was anticipated by the companies themselves and certainly by the analysts that follow them. So some of the things that were expected were that there was an expansion in number of so-called 340B institutions. These are institutions that serve generally lower-income populations and receive special rebates, special pricing from drug companies mandated by the government. So there was a sharp expansion in a number of these institutions. And there was also an increase in the rebates that drug companies need to provide the government for drugs that they give to Medicaid patients. And that was understood and fully baked in, I think, to people's expectations. What wasn't really anticipated were the fact that the Medicaid rebates were now being expanded to Medicaid HMOs for the first time. So previously, there was always a presumption in legislation that if an HMO or some kind of private insurance company was privately negotiating rebates from drug manufacturers, the government wouldn't impose an additional rebate on top of that. And now the government, for the first time, is imposing an additional rebate on top of that. And so the companies that provide drugs, a lot of drugs, to Medicaid patients are probably still going to have to pay the same rebates they do to the Medicaid HMOs. They can't get out of those contracts. Now they have to pay on top of that a rebate to the government. I don't think that was fully appreciated. And the other thing is that there is another adjustment, another rebate that the drug companies need to pay in addition to the standard rebate that's calculated off of the Consumer Price Index, CPI, relative to the price increases of the drug over time. So that's a long way of saying that if a drug has been on the market for a period of time and has taken a lot of price increases over that time, they have to pay a discount back to the government. So drugs that have been on the market for a very long time and have increased in price over that time, they're the ones who have to pay the most rebate back to the government. And the way it works is that the standard Medicaid rebate is paid off of net sales, and then the companies have to go back and pay the CPI rebate on gross sales. And so drug companies can actually be in a situation where they're rebating more than 100% of the revenue off of a product back to the government, because they're first paying a rebate on the net sales, and then they have to go back and pay a rebate on the gross sales. And in fact, Eli Lilly on an earnings call made the point that a couple of their insulin products, they were in a position of having to rebate more than 100% of the cost of this product to the government, and that's probably because those are expensive products to manufacture. So typically products with a smaller profit margin might be in that situation where they're in a situation where they're rebating close to or as much as 100% of sales back to the government. In fact, there's also a provision in the law that takes effect in a couple of years that says that the rebate can't be greater than 100% of the revenue off the product, but it can be up to 100% of the revenue off the product.
You'd think that'd be a great disincentive to put that product out to market.
Well, I think, for products that cost more to manufacture, cost more to sell, where there's less of a profit margin, those tend to be things like expensive biologics where there's a lot involved in the manufacturing process. There isn't a disincentive, especially if you know that those products are going to be used heavily by the Medicaid population, because you're going to end up having to give away most, in some cases, all of the profits off of the product back to the government because of this unusual rebate structure that we have in place.
Now, why is it the consumer price index is the mark that you're pegging it to? Is that a concern? I mean, I understand that medical price inflation typically rises a couple of points at least faster than the CPI. Was that another way to anticipate or to try and claw back a larger percentage of the price?
Well, the CPI adjustments, there's always been some adjustment for the increase in the price of the drug relative to the CPI, and could be that when they originally wrote the legislation years ago, they used the CPI knowing that it was going to grow less quickly than medical inflation overall. But this ends up hurting the most products that have been on the market for a very long time, where there have been price increases over time. CPI is also being used as a benchmark for the new independent Medicare commission that was created, the so-called IPAB, which is going to be mandated under law to have to create provisions that keep medical spending within a certain target to CPI. So CPI uses a benchmark to try to restrain growth in medical inflation.
Now let's also talk about that for a minute. You talked about that at length in your piece in terms of that this new Medicare board, the Independent Payment Advisory Board, I believe it's called, is not subject to congressional review. The administration's not going to be able to control it. And their mandate is not to change eligibility, not to address provider payments, but they have to look at other things, and other, in this case, includes drug and device pricing.
That's right. So the Independent Payment Advisory Board, IPAB, and you're right, specifically written into legislation that it can't be subject to judicial review. There's no appeals mechanism. There's no requirement that it goes through sort of traditional rulemaking process with its notice and comment. It really is a self-contained entity appointed by the executive branch, not subject to congressional oversight, not subject to judicial review. So it could be a very powerful independent entity. And its mandate is to put forward proposals that keep Medicare spending within a certain target of CPI. And then Congress has the ability to put out a counterproposal if they want. If they don't agree with what IPAB has done, Congress has to come up with a counterproposal that achieves the same level of savings as what IPAB has put forward. But there is a requirement put on Congress that they have to act, I think, within 30 days. So it's basically leveraging Congress's inability to act. So what they wrote in the legislation, knowing that they had to make IPAB subject to some level of congressional review, otherwise you'd have a separation of powers issue, is they basically said IPAB's proposals will go into effect if Congress doesn't act in 30 days to come up with an alternative proposal. And we know it's going to be very hard for Congress to act within 30 days to come up with a proposal to cut Medicare spending. So in fact, IPAB's provisions, their recommendations are going to be sort of fast-tracked. Now, the unusual thing is that they got inserted in the legislation language that says that any healthcare entity provider that's subject to an adjustment in their reimbursement under Medicare based on their productivity, so to speak, can't be subject to IPAB's purview. And so basically hospitals, doctors, any providers now are exempted from IPAB's purview. So that means IPAB has to focus entirely on medical product developers. And the other language in the law is exactly what you said, is that you can't change eligibility for a product or service. And so the only thing you can really do is affect the price of the product or service. So what IPAB's going to do, the only thing they really can do, is impose price controls on medical products. So they can only look at medical products because they can't look at anyone who has an adjustment in their reimbursement based on measures of productivity, which ends up being all the providers under this law, physicians, hospitals. And they can't change eligibility status for product or service. And so all they can really do is look at price. And so most people suspect, reading that legislation, most people suspect that the only thing that IPAB's going to be able to do is probably either import existing price controls into medical product areas where those price controls don't currently exist, or take the existing price schedules that Medicare pays and just bring them down over time. Because IPAB is probably not going to be able to look at medical products on a product-by-product basis and say, we think this should be priced this way and this product should be priced that way. Really, all they're going to be able to do, because they're a remote bureaucratic organization without a lot of staff and resources, is just look at broad price schedules. And so you're going to see things like injectable drugs are now paid based on their average sales price plus 6%. They'll take down to 6% to 4% and 2% and 0. And then pretty soon it's going to be average sales price minus 2%. And they might import the Medicaid price schedule. So Medicaid companies have to provide their quote-unquote best price to the Medicaid program. They might say, well, we think companies also have to provide their best price to this segment of the Medicare population and pretty soon all of the Medicare population. So they'll just start to import existing price schedules into more aspects of the Medicare market, and they'll take price schedules that currently exist and just bring them down over time.
Last question. You know, I think the industry went into this hoping that it could get a better bargain than if it didn't come to the table in terms of protecting its ability to innovate from even potentially more heavy-handed regulations in terms of issues they were worried about, like drug importation or importing price controls into Medicare Part D. Looking at the legislation that you've seen evolve from this process, is their ability to innovate in jeopardy now?
Well, I think all the things that the pharmaceutical industry was worried about when they cut their so-called deal with the administration are still on the table, and they'll be fighting those battles very soon. I think IPAB has almost unlimited authority to create new statutory provisions that give CMS new authorities, if you will. And so things like importing the Medicaid best prices into the Medicare Part D drug benefit, which is what the industry is really worried about, sure, that isn't in the legislation, but IPAP can effectively do that on their own without new legislation, just through sort of regulatory fiat. So everything that the drug industry is worried about can still be done, will still be on the table, and some of it can just be put into place through regulation and rulemaking through this IPAP mechanism. IPAP really is a powerful entity that can do things without congressional legislation. I think where the industry really put in jeopardy innovation is when they bargained away, what they effectively bargained away was preferential pricing for certain segments of the Medicare population under the Part D drug benefit. They basically giving rebates to the Medicare, certain Medicare recipients under the Part D drug benefit. I think by giving away preferential pricing to one segment of the population that isn't available to other segments of the population, they really surrendered their argument that the markets should be the determinant of the value of products.
Right, that's the danger, is that once you've got a monopsony buyer and you give that buyer, the government, a special price in one segment, it's very hard to keep it from leaching out into other segments.
Right.
Well, that's terrific. Somewhat grim perspective for innovation, but Scott, thanks very much for your perspective.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.